Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. We want to welcome you to our podcast this evening, those of you who are on Facebook Live, as well as those who are on Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, we just got past a couple of months and we talked about Black history. Then after that, we talk about women history. And tonight we want to talk about, you know, after these holidays are over or these moments are over with, where do we go from here? And or do we wait for somebody else to tell us that we need another holiday or give us another holiday? I'm very curious about a lot of things, and I'm just curious about your thoughts. Where shall we go from here? Why should we wait on other people to say what we should celebrate or what we shouldn't celebrate? Why don't we have enough initiative to do our own thing, so to speak, and celebrate that something that's truly significant to us, for us and by us? But before we get started in that conversation, I would like to introduce to you again and again my partner, Brother Satawi Jaheed, who always has something positive to say. And Brother Satawi Jaheed, you got it, sir.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you, David. Can you hear me all right? David, can you hear me okay?
Yes,
I can hear you. I didn't even know I was on mute all this time. Oh, wow. Okay. Go ahead, man.
Each week when we open up the show, we open up with a reading from Daily Motivations, African American Success, by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who is also the author of Think and Grow Rich, Black Choice, the author of What Makes the Great Great. And tonight we have to make sure that we understand principle Kuji Chagali, as we say in Guru Sava, which is self-determination. We define ourselves, name ourselves, and speak for ourselves instead of being defined, named, and spoken for by others. And that's very important as it relates to tonight's topic. So for doing that, I will begin to read. Who are you kidding? Status is a bridge from where you are to where you want to be. Gloria Nauer, writer. I love the story of a man who was very insecure. One day he was promoted from major to colonel and was ushered into his new office. He blazed proudly at his new surroundings. Suddenly there was a knock at the door. In walked a corporal. Colonel said, "Just a minute, corporal. I have to finish this phone call." Pick up the receiver. He pushed a button and said, "I'm sorry about the interruption, General. Now, where were we?" "Oh, yes, sir. I'll take care of that." "Of course, I will, sir. I'll check my schedule and see when we can meet for tennis." "It's true. We're close friends, and yes, I'll call the president immediately after I finish talking with you." General, you're welcome, sir. Colonel ceremoniously put the phone down and turned to the young man and asked, "Now, what can I do for you?" Corporal answered, "Well, sir, I just came in to connect your phone." Far too many people walk through life with a low self-image that are overly concerned with their weakness rather than their stress. They try to conceal them for false sense of status. A person with a healthy, happy attitude towards his world recognizes his imperfections and strives to find his strengths. Never forget that you have strengths and talents waiting to be developed. Today I realize any need false status. I am comfortable with who and what I am. As I develop my strengths, I want to come to my greatest gifts. And, you know, that's so important to understand, you know, I was trying to impress the corporal that he was talking to, a general, and he was called president right after he got off the phone with the general, but his phone wasn't even hooked up. So, you know, he was trying to impress his status upon the corporal, but the corporal came in to hook up his phone. And too often, you know, we be doing things and trying to impress people about our status as opposed to just being you. So it's so important to make sure that we always be in our authentic selves and walk forward in this life, carry out what we do, because status, as I said in the beginning, is a bridge from where you are to where you want to be. So it's important to understand. Back to you, David.
Okay. You know, I appreciate that, sir. You know, hearing from you, positive information is always good to hear. You know, before I get into my conversation, I want to share this story my mother told me years ago, based on what you just spoke about. And I know some of you have heard me tell this story, but some of you may not have it. Those who are on Facebook, those who are on Blog Talk Radio may need to hear this. You know, this story goes like this. She told me there was a, once upon a time, there was an elderly gentleman and a young boy approaching this village, and they was riding on this donkey. And so as they moved further into the village, some of the villagers approached them, and they chastised the old man because, he, you know, they chastised the little boy because he was riding on the donkey and the old man was walking. And so the old man and the little boy, they got together and they reasoned together. So they switched places. And now the old man was riding on the donkey and the little boy was leading it. So as they moved further into the village, more villagers approached them. And they really fussed out the little boy. Why are you sitting there fuss at the old man? Why are you sitting up there on the donkey and that little boy walking? And so they moved further on into the village, and they reasoned one more time. So what they decided to do, so they picked up the donkey. But as soon as they picked up the donkey, they got on this little rickety bridge, and the bridge, because of the weight of the donkey, was moving back and forward. And unfortunately, the donkey fell over the side and drowned. And the moral of this story is, don't lose your ass trying to please everybody. And so, based on the story that you just told, a lot of us go this way and we go that way, trying to appear this way to some group and appear that way to another group. But you know, we are uniquely made. God made us in his image. And we are all unique. The snowflakes, the blades of grass, everything is totally different. That's what our uniqueness is all about, because we all different. We can all bring something different to the plate, into a conversation, into our lifestyle. And so, again, we want to welcome everybody on the call this evening and those who are on Blog Talk Radio as Facebook Live as well. We have several new people who just entered the room. We have my partner, Mr. Bill Gooden. Dr. Nala Ali is with us. Mr. Neil Spencer. I see Mr. Vernon Streeter. Walter Dempsey Murphy, and long-lost friend and cousin, brother William Murphy, William Buddy Murphy. Got a lot of Murphys on here tonight. So, but anyway, welcome everyone. And tonight, as I was just mentioning, you know, before we get heavy into our conversation, I was telling Vernon earlier that the National Black Unity News will be at this World Conference, Black World Conference, this in the next couple of weeks, where leaders from all over the world will be at this conference. And they be right here, they'll be right here in Baltimore. We will have vendor space there. Dr. Ali, who's on with us tonight, as well as Brother High Key. And a couple of people, they brought vending tables there, like Bill Curtis and a few other people. And if you don't know by now, since our inception of the National Black Unity News, we just covered the United States. But now we're in England, Panama, Ethiopia, all over Africa. The paper's growing with leaps and bounds, and that's because of each and every one of you who have participated in this publication. And I don't know where tomorrow we're going to be out, but we have another issue coming out next week. And I've been talking to people all over the place, but as I just mentioned, you know, when we go to this conference, of course, I'm going to take plenty of our old issues as well as our new issues there. And we will be, you know, giving them out to the dignitaries that, you know, we do know the president of Ghana and ambassadors all over the place will be at this event, this convention here in Baltimore. And we have a lot of inroads because a lot of our people travel all over the world. And they know quite a few of the facilitators as well as some of the, you know, the dignitaries as well. And so I don't know after, but I do believe after this event is over, we're going to expand our territory greatly. And so, and like I say, this publication comes by divine inspiration. It's not a David Murphy. It got Bill Gooden and Walter Murphy on there tonight, and they both know that by the grace of God, this publication came to be. Bill Gooden suggested that we do this publication, but, you know, after careful prayer, then we brought it forth. And since the inception, man, we met a lot of people along the way. We helped a lot of people, and a lot of people helped us as well. And so it's a powerful thing that we're doing because media is a powerful, powerful tool. Now, I'm going to show you the strength of media. Now, in February, the government, or some people, I don't know who started it, suggested that we should celebrate Black history, which is a good thing. You know, I have no problem with it. But I do have some issues, though, because, you know, when I was a little boy, we didn't have that when I was coming up. We didn't have Black history. I was learning about everybody else's history but ours. And even till this day, based on what I'm hearing and seeing, they're not teaching too much. You know, they'll pick one or two people out, and they show the light side of them, but they don't show our true history because our history don't start with slavery. You know, they don't tell you who the original people are. You know, they just don't go deep enough, far as I'm concerned. And then right after Black History Month, then we had this Women's History Month, and it's always great to celebrate our queens, our women, our mothers, our sisters. And it's a powerful thing, but you know, who suggested that they do it in this particular month and how long and for what? And you know, and then here we are now that those two major celebrations are over with, where do we go from here? And my suggestion was, or my question was to you, do we wait until they suggest another holiday for us before it's legit? Or do we wait for other people to tell us what to celebrate and what not to celebrate? And so, because I believe personally that history begins with each and every one of us, because each and every one of us have our own stories, our own walks of life. And for example, I just mentioned there's several Murphys on here. I got a brother on here from New Jersey, a brother here from Virginia, and yours truly is right here in Baltimore, Maryland. Now they took roots in New Jersey, took roots in Virginia, and I took root here in Baltimore. But we all come from this place, you know, that we know our immediate family is in a place called Whiteville, North Carolina. And we have a tree that goes back quite a bit, but it don't tell our whole story. It takes us to a certain point in the 1800s and stuff, but that's about far as it goes that I'm aware of. And that's far as my history is concerned. That's far as I can, you know, have people that actually told me, and I met some of the folks, you know, in my family that with my uncles and aunts. I met my grandfather, and I met his brothers. And because we all, me and my brothers, we named after our uncles. And but see, that's far as my history goes. And so, and the point I'm trying to make is, because I have my own history, you have your history, and we let other people tell us when to celebrate, when to do this, when to do that, when to get up, when to go to sleep, and do, you know, just it goes on and on and on. And because we in the state, I'm talking about black melanated people, black African American, black people in general, we all know our brief history that things were stolen from us, taken from us. And so we are very confused people because, you know, because things were stolen and taken from us, we really don't know too much past a generation or two generations. And that's come through the grapevine, what was told to us by our own family members. But like I say, of course, you know, we go back just like any family, we go back to the original. But in any case, tonight, I just want to pick some of your brains in your minds, because there's a lot of people right here on this call right now that I think should be celebrated for the work they've done, for the services they provided, and the trials they had to overcome. Martin Luther King was a great man. That's a great and wonderful thing. He united so many of us. Malcolm X did some great and wonderful things as well. But, you know, there was a man named, that most people don't know, but probably me and a few people on there, a guy named Prentice Murphy. You know, he had a history too. My father came from this place, as I mentioned before, called Whiteville, North Carolina. He moves to Baltimore. He had military, and he was a very educated man for his date and time. He had a couple of years of college. And for a black man during that period of time, that was really, you know, extremely rare. But nevertheless, he came here and met my mother, and they had several children. And it was eight of us, to be exact, nine. And you know, one of us died as an infant. So it was nine of us. But my father later on told me some stories, some heart-wrenching stories of his history. And he came here as a Renaissance man. You know, he come from the farm. He know how to farm. He know how to build. He could sing, had his own quartet. And I mean, he was just an all-around type guy. But then he had to go on these places, what they call jobs. And then he was reduced to a boy. Negro, or, you know, another term for that. Had him with all that education, had him cleaning out toilets and stuff. And he had to endure that. And come home, you know, and then hear a bunch of children screaming, hollering, want food on the table and all of that kind of, that's a lot of pressure for a man. After he'd been through, you know, with all that stuff that he thought he was going to do and what, you know, had planned to do, but because of society, the color of his skin. He had to go through so much toil and trouble, blood, you know, I mean, all types of pain. And as, just as being a human, you know, it took its toll on him. And I thank God I had an opportunity that he and I had a long talk one day. And he shared that with me. And you see, ladies and gentlemen, because of my father's history, because of what my father had to endure, and unfortunately, what I seen what happened to my father, I said I would never, ever do myself because of his history. But guess what happened? See, my father ended up being an alcoholic. And at the age of 13, I followed his footsteps. I said I would never do that. But nevertheless, that happened to me as well. And not only did that happen to me, it also, you know, I have went to counters, and they would not wait on me in my lifetime. I went to a school where it was predominantly white school, where people, as soon as we got off the school bus, they was protesting. And I was called every kind of name you can think of as a child. Even before I got on this bus, even when I moved to this place called Evanston Village, I had to walk almost a mile and a half to get to the bus. And did you know, as a child of 11 years old, I had to duck through alleys behind cars and stuff just to get to the school bus because other folks that didn't look like me didn't want me in their community. They would throw stones at me and bricks and anything they get their hands on. So I had to hide and run. They would try to jump. I mean, it was like it was a gauntlet going and coming. And so because of my father's history and then my history, and you see, that's one of the reasons why I do the things I do today, because not only with the pain my father had to suffer and the pain I had to suffer. And so my history is made up like this. I don't want my children or my children's children to go through what I'm going through. But unfortunately, things haven't changed that much. It's just not overt, but then again, it's becoming that way again. People are coming out the closet and being very bold about racism, discrimination, and hate, just straight up hateful. And it's really, you know, logically, I can't understand why, but you know, but it's just a psychological thing, I guess, men, people go through. Because it's not just a black and a white thing. It's a territorial, a tribal type of thing. Because I often told you, you know, I in Baltimore, I used to live in the 600 block of Baker Street, and there was a 500 block of Baker Street. The same children, we looked alike, we was in the same type of conditions, went to the same school, in the same class. But because one lived in one block and we lived in another block, and one of the children in my block had a problem with the children in the next block and they got into a beef or a fight or something, that means that the block that I was on had to fight, I had to fight my own friends or go against my own friends because I lived in that block. So it's not even in ancient Africa, tribe fought each other, ancient China, the same thing. High school, they still do it to today. My school better than your school. My neighborhood better than your neighborhood. So it's not just a black and white thing. It's a psychological thing. But in any case, before we you know get into the discussion, there's some people I just want to recognize because they have some things going on that, like my partner Bill Glenn, I just happened to turn on the internet, which I'm on quite often, and he's out there doing his thing. See, Bill Gooden, not only is the partner, editor-in-chief of the National Black Unity News, Bill Gooden is the author. He and I, well, he was a writer, but I helped with the cover and the layout of the books. He and I wrote 6 or 7 books together. He wrote the book, but I helped with the design. But, Bill, what were you doing downtown today, sir?
Hey, Dave, first let me just say good evening to everybody and thank you. Well, I was downtown. Basically, it was people, man, you know, people that get SNAP benefits is being cut, you know, and I guess the SNAP is the food stamps. So, you know, for instance, man, there's one lady that she used to get $500 a month for her family, but now she's down to like $140 a month. And I've heard people say they you know, was getting $85 and getting $15. So it was basically to just bring attention to that, even though it's on a federal level where we was in front of City Hall, but just to bring attention to the plight of what's happening, as well as they talked about, you know, tomorrow is going to be a big protest, which Dave was mentioned Saturday at the breakfast in front of the Board of Education. And that's basically in regards to just the ugly disaster that the Board of Education is in, right? I mean, you know, attendance and learning, violence, children passing that can't read or do math, you know, so, you know, people are going to be out there tomorrow calling for change and calling for the removal of Sandra Lisa, who's the CEO who's making $500,000 a year damn near, right? But, you know, I would say, Dave, you know, the unfortunate thing, as I see it for me, I say that, you know, sometimes this system reward people to fail us because, you know, if we praise people that's failing us, then we never know what good leadership look like. So, you know, I'm asking people, you know, that have some concern about students and their children, hey, to join us tomorrow. Because there's one thing for sure, Dave. Tomorrow is the anniversary of Dr. King's death, which will be 55 years. And, you know, Dr. King used to always say, you know, our silence only benefits our oppressors. So people that's oppressing you, if they're oppressing you, you ain't saying ouch, you ain't saying nothing about what's happening, then for them, they're saying that they okay with what we're doing to them because they're not saying nothing. So it's important that people see that we can't be silent. And like I always say to you, Dave, you have never been silent. You may not have been out there a protester, but you have never been silent because you've been writing people's stories. You've been letting people's voices be heard. And as you always say, if people believe it or not, that's why I always say the pen is mightier than the sword, you know, because you could take the media and you could take your pen and sign something and knock down a million people at one time. You know what I'm saying? So I don't care what kind of weapon you have. A weapon will never be as mightier than the sword because it's the pen that sends the soldiers out there to kill other people, right? So, you know, it's just important that we see that we have to stand up. And I always say it's not about the individual or the race. It had to be about our issues. And sometimes we just organize around people that got name recognition, they got money, a political party, or the family that they come from, but we're not organizing around issues that are hurting the masses of us. So, you know, I just thank God, man, that I've always tried to be a person that tried to be about issues and not about personalities. So I'm just asking people, hey, if they're interested in the children and what's happening, to come out tomorrow. I'm going to close with this, Dave, you know, because everybody that's on this call right now, on this call, listening to Facebook or whatever, then everybody have to ask themselves, is education better today than it was 50 years ago? And I'm going to say, absolutely not. Now, that's an indictment upon all of us. Why in the hell, 50 years later, would education be worse than it was 50 years ago when we supposed to be fighting for things that we don't have presently, that we didn't have presently, right? So people have to see the need that, you know, if we don't unite, if we don't stand up for ourselves, then these are the results that we will constantly get. And I'm closing with this. I know it's not going to close. Because it's interesting when people look at what's happening with Donald Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, I always said Donald Trump should have been in jail and on death row. The man was in charge of the government that he tried to overthrow. People died. But yet, even though he's getting ready to be indicted, he still has the ability to campaign to run for president. Shirley Dixon, which was never indicted, over some little old trivial stuff, had to wait 4 or 5 years before she was eligible to run again. Catherine Prue, who got a federal indictment, she could never run again. But Donald Trump, who's responsible for people dying and people attacking the Capitol, he have an opportunity to run again. And then I'm saying the people have to look at in terms of how strong the racism is in this country and how strong white privileges is and how corrupt this government is.
Well, man, like I say, Bill, you on it, and you're right, man. Like you say, especially with that SNAP program, and I've seen it on the news, and I know people personally are struggling now, not only with the food, they got the water bills and everything else that's overtaking them, and people having a real, real rough time. But yet, they can send billions and billions of dollars to a little country over there, going to work, and they fighting each other that looks like them. And send billions over there, and while we over here suffering and begging for bread, especially the senior citizens who paid their dues, paid their taxes, been in the military, and had to go through atrocities such as this in this day and time, had to be out there protesting, begging, but they can send, like I say, send money to every place else, but you know, but home. But in any case, like you said, that's an indictment on all of us because. The government's supposed to be us, and if we allow this to happen, then it's going to happen. And so, again, you know, I appreciate your input. And Brother Cliff, how are you, sir?
Oh.
caught you off guard, huh?
Absolutely.
Caught you with your mouth full, too, didn't I?
Yes, indeed. I said, okay, he's probably going to go to a couple more people.
Well, I can. You want me to come then, back to you? You want me to come back to you?
Yeah. Let's let a couple of Brother Bill had me searching for something that I wanted to look up and sort of veggie back, as you might say, on one of the comments in particular he made about the educational system and how it has not improved over the last 50 years. And so I was looking up a particular document at that point in time. So I wanted to make reference to that.
Well, you know, Bill did mention something that was, I find kind of rough. You know, when I was 5, 6 years old, now, I don't remember in the kindergarten, but in the first and second grade, I could read. You know, I mean, we read Dick and Jay. I mean, we went through that book, like, you know, we could read. And when people sent us the story 6 or 7 years, we knew how to count. We knew how much change we were supposed to get back, and we didn't have calculators. You know, we had to learn things called the timetables and stuff like that. We could just run it off, just like that, just, you know, 10 times 10, just that, you know. And now, I hate to say, I love my grandchildren. They got calculators. They have computers. They supposed to have modernized schools because we had secondhand school. We read, you know, back in them days, we didn't, you know, we got the left door. Everything was torn and ragged at the time we got to it, black children. But yet we was able to do all these different things. But I used to sit there and quiz my grandchildren. Man, they having it rough, man. I mean, they wasn't getting it at all in school, man. You know, I was shocked and it hurt. You know, it was an indictment on me because they couldn't read that well, and they definitely couldn't count. And they in the second and third grade and stuff, you know. And I said, wow. And then one day, I went on a field trip with one of them. And I had to sit in kind of what they call an escort or a monitor or something.
Oh, okay, in the back of the truck.
Yeah.
Okay, let me bring some people out here. And I was in one of the classrooms, and I never seen nothing like that in my lifetime. I mean, the children were on the table. They were throwing stuff. They was running all over the class. And the teachers, I mean, it was normal for her because she sit there with just, you know, it was like a regular day. It got to the point I had to jump up and holler at them little children and made them sit down. You know, they looked at me like I came from Mars or something. Cause they didn't know. I hollered at them in the school. And they weren't used to that. But one thing they was used to, if it showed up. And they saw that I wasn't playing either. <laughs> You know? I had to go a little hood on them, but you know. but they took heed because somebody in their family had a little hood in them too, a little authority, and they recognized that. But you know, and I was just sitting there for a few hours. But you know, like I said, this is kind of stuff, man, that with all these tools and stuff that my children have, they took the reason, the power of reasoning, thinking. And you know, because we had to do the thing. We didn't have all of those tools. And besides, that would have been called cheating in our days. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had calculated, did all that stuff for you. You know, we used to get, you know, just looking over somebody's paper, man. that was big time trouble. Even though you still had to figure things out, you know. But in any case, Brother Cliff, you want to update us on something?
Okay, sure.
Got an event coming up too, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, while you were talking there, I actually found the document that Brother Bill inspired me to look up, and I'm just gonna give you some excerpts of it. We come in an hour of great crisis and tremendous promise for Black America. While the white nation hovers on the brink of chaos, while politicians offer no hope of real change, we stand on the edge of history and are faced with an amazing and frightening choice. We may choose to slip back into the decadent white politics of American life, or we may press forward, moving relentlessly from here to the creation of our own Black life. The choice is large, but the time is very short. Let there be no mistake. We come in a time of unrelieved crisis for our people. From every rural community in Alabama to the high-rise compounds in Chicago. We bring the agonies of the masses of our people from the sprawling black cities of Watson, Nairobi in the west, to the decay of Harlem and Roxbury in the east. The testimony we bear is the same. We are the witnesses to social disaster. Our cities are crime-haunted dying grounds. Huge sectors of our youth and countless others face permanent unemployment. Those of us who work find our paychecks able to purchase less and less. Neither the courts nor the prisons contribute to anything resembling justice or reformation. The schools are unable or unwilling to educate our children for the real world of our struggles. Meanwhile, the officially approved epidemic of drugs threatens to wipe out the minds and strength of our best young warriors. Economic, cultural, and spiritual depression stalk Black America, and the price for survival often appears to be more than we are able to pay. On every side, in every area of our lives, the American institutions in which we have placed our trust are unable to cope with the crises they have created by their single-minded dedication to profits for some and white supremacy above all. And beyond these shores, there's more of the same. For while we are pressed down under all the dying weight of a bloated, inwardly decaying white civilization, many of our brothers in Africa and the rest of the third world have fallen prey to the same powers of exploitation and deceit. Whenever America faces the unorganized, politically powerless forces of the non-white world, its goal is domination by any means necessary, as if to hide from itself the crumbling of its own systems of life and work. But Americans cannot hide. They can run to China and the moon and the edges of consciousness, but they cannot hide. The crises we face as Black people are the crises of the entire society. They go deep to the very bones and marrow, to the essential nature of America's economic, political, and cultural systems. They are the natural end product of a society built on the twin foundations of white racism and white capitalism. So let it be clear to us now, the desperation of our people, the agonies of our cities, the desolation of our countryside, the pollution of the air and the water, these things will not be significantly affected by new faces in the old places in Washington, D.C. This is the truth we must face here if we are to join our people everywhere in the movement forward toward liberation. There's more to it. The reason why I was inspired to this is because I remember talking to you one time that I was going to read that particular analysis and basically, I guess, await the reactions the thoughts that will go through everyone else's minds of that is a really sobering analysis of what is happening in our community, in this country today. At which point then I was going to give a little more information about that particular manifesto I just read. That was from Gary, Indiana, 1972, 51 years ago. And it is, to me, a sobering reminder of even with the advent of the internet and social media and everyone having a cell phone the size of a computer back then that you can put in your pocket and all of the conveniences that many of us take for granted that we never even imagined back then, even with all that, how little the actual condition of our people on the ground has changed. And so that what Brother Bill was talking about just kind of reminded me of that. Now, as far as what we're working on going forward, the Maryland Pan-African Cooperative Coalition is planning on having our next Zoom meeting on not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday, April 12th. And I will send out the Zoom link to you and to other people who are on our list, assuming that the internet gremlins don't try to block my emails. A lot of times when I send out mass emails, they bounce some of them back, and then I have to send them several times just to get them out to everyone. But the Maryland Pan-African Cooperative Coalition is planning to have our next Zoom meeting next Wednesday, April 12th at 7 p.m. There are a number of things that we want to talk about, and I won't go into them in detail here, but one is the State of the Black World Conference, which I know Brother Haki is going to be going to. Other members of this group are probably going to be going to. I'll be there representing the Pan-African Federalist Movement and to a degree the Six Region Diaspora Caucus. The PAFM is actually sending me there. So that's going on in the week of April 19th to 22nd. There will also be other international conferences coming up. There is the Permanent Forum of People of African Descent that's coming to New York on May 30th to June 2nd, I believe. And a number of us are either going to be participating in person or virtually. There's also African Liberation Day that is coming up. The Maryland Council of Elders and Camp Harambe, the people, are going to be working together to bring us African Liberation Day and Lafayette Square Park, and that will be on May 27th. Also want to talk about the future plans for the coalition, creating more means by which our different organizational members can share their missions. Of course, I want to talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement and the Six Region Diaspora Caucus. Those are two organizations that I'm in, and they're international Pan-African organizations. But other people have organizations and projects and all they want to share. So we want to make sure that people have the opportunity to share those with each other. Also want to plan our next Pan-African Town Hall. Since COVID is starting to let up just a little bit, people are becoming a little less afraid to come out and gather in public. One thing we want to start talking about is planning when our next Pan-African Town Hall is going to be. We haven't had one since COVID hit. We had 5 in 2017, 4 in 2018, 3 in 2019, and COVID hit and everyone was out of the pool. So now we want to get to the point where we can start having those Pan-African Town Hall meetings again. So hopefully we'll be able to have at least one or two, probably at Arts Social Club, maybe in some other locations, sometime in the second half of 2023. There's also a community defense proposal that Brother Thomas Ruffin had brought up in our previous meeting, and hopefully we'll even have some updates with regard to that. So that's what we're doing as an organization, but I also just wanted to share that little piece from that 1972 Gary, Indiana manifesto that came from the 1972 Gary, Indiana Black Independent Political Party Convention as sort of something that Brother Bill's talk kind of reminded me of. And I think that's basically it for me right now. And again, I'll be sending out the invites and the link. I've sent the email out to some people already, just letting people know that next Wednesday is going to be our meeting. But the actual invite and Zoom link will be coming out probably around the weekend.
I appreciate that, sir. Great information, but it's sobering information because it's confirmation, like you say, what Bill just spoke about. 50 years later, we're worse off now than we was then. And some call it progress. But in any case, you know, I'm switching gears now because, you know, we all kind of aware of these problems that we're facing. Now, the publication, the National Black Unity News, is solution-oriented. So I'm going to switch this thing around to find some solutions to our problems. Now, we are fighting on many fronts, politically, economically, socially, and so many other fronts, spiritually. And but Brother Haki, can you unmute yourself, sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings,
my bad.
Yes, sir. Brother Haki is one of those brothers who traveled all over the country going to events and networking, and now he's traveling all over the world. And I appreciate you for doing that, for what you did yesterday. And I remember this brother, he was just a little vendor selling his books around town. And to see the growth in this young man. But he's also had met many people along the road. He's involved with so many fronts. And like I said, he's traveling all over Africa on a consistent basis now. And he's heavily involved with people who are making things happen. And so give us a little insight on what's going to take place at this African conference, Brother Haki.
Yeah, thank you, brothers. And thank you, Brother Cliff, for just speaking about that. I think it's going to be essential for organizers on the ground to be present at the best of your of our capabilities to really have this potential, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity for Black people in the Baltimore area, the DMV area, to show up and show out. It's rare that a city like Baltimore would get an opportunity for the president of Ghana to actually come. So, you know, I just acknowledge that in terms of from a organizing perspective that, you know, a lot of things can be learned through the process for me leading up to that, just observing as I'm sharing the opportunity with a lot of different people, just observing the responses and, you know, just online as well as I'm really getting a good understanding of what this actually means, not just to Baltimore, of course, but to the Black world. But also, just an FYI, there will be some Caribbean prime ministers. I believe the former prime minister of Jamaica, the prime minister of Grenada, and the prime minister of Barbados, and the vice president of Colombia, first Black female Colombian. Actually, I just saw a video of her, a strong and proud African, Spanish-speaking, Latino-speaking, Spanish-speaking Black woman, you know. So I feel Danny Glover, the activist, will be present, and who else? So Sheila Jackson Lee, who worked on the reparations, H.R. 40, for a significant amount of time. She's really chairing that in the United States in Congress. H.R. 40 is the reparations bill. And, of course, Dr. Julius Garvey will be, he's the co-chair of this conference. And so many people know of his great work and his father. I'm sorry, yes, his father, Dr. Garvey. I'm sorry, Marcus Garvey. So I'm excited about that. And also, you know, I'll just begin to close, and I'll just say that Dr. Beryl Beekman, I believe she's going to be coming. She's in the Netherlands and a few others. I'm not sure if Dr. Horn will be there, Brother Cliff, but I know Kamau or Kamasi, the one that's in Seattle, he already has registered, SRDC member. And so we have a late night Zoom tonight with Dr. Daniels and Brother Kareem. He's the key point. I'm not the key point person, you know, coordinating all of this operations. But, you know, I saw that something needed to be done. And I just jumped in there and just said, look, I'm going to make it happen. Whatever they needed me to do, you know, I felt that it was that valuable for our global African presence to be a part and to share the opportunity and, you know, get the word out to who needs to be known. So I feel very accomplished already that, you know, everybody that should know, want to know, need to know, they are aware of it. So thank you, brother.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. It does my heart so good because four or five of us right here on this small group with us will be there. And but see the part, you know, solution when I'm talking about is this. You see, Bill just mentioned that he was on the front line in front of City Hall. Comes on right after that and say that we're organizing, we're bringing people together. And before that, I was saying that the National Black Union Needs is a solution-oriented publication that's bringing us together locally, now internationally. Then Brother Haki comes on to talk about how the leaders of the world, Black world, our Black world, are coming together, organizing, speaking to one another. And we all have one purpose, to liberate us as a people. This is powerful stuff is taking place. If you don't know what's really going on, you know, there is such a great, I see it from my city, I see it from on a national and international level. We are sitting down. You see, back in the day, we were able to, but, you know, we couldn't get things done because, you know, this group wanted to oversee that group. You know, we sit at the table, but even though we had 90% of the same issues that we wanted to take care of, but we let them 2 or 3% of our issues separate us, and nothing got done. And that's one of the reasons why 50 years later we're in the same boat with, because we divided and conquered. But now, this day, there's a movement going on. Individual movements, but yet they are movements. I belong to a group called the National Council of Elders, Black Elders. They are coming together. Old folks even coming together. We have our youth coming together on many fronts. Man, I'm telling you, if you don't have your eyes open, your ears open, things are beginning to happen. Because if we don't, as you can see, it will be the destruction of us as a people. And don't think it won't happen, because it's already been happening. People are killing us at an alarming rate, not just through guns. Yes, that's one of us, but through medicine, drugs, and education, and everything else. And if we don't wake up and take our rightful place and don't sit idly by and do nothing, well, this will continue to happen. Go ahead, Brother Hockey. I see you got your hand up.
Yeah, no, I wanted to just add, you know, and hopefully, Brother Cliff, if you're aware of this, but I went to City Hall like last week. So many people know, just an update, and a shout out to the leaders of A Beautiful Struggle for putting together the local citywide reparations bill. It didn't get voted on thus far, but I testified for that. Several others testified at City Hall. Council President Nick Mosley put it in with Christopher Burnett, and it's for a commission. And just to FYI, many different local municipalities have been putting out local reparations related commissions and things of that nature. And so many people have heard about what went on in San Francisco rather recently, and, you know, the first, shall say, city to form a reparations, shall say, bill that got passed was Evanston, Illinois, and so they did some things there. So for what it's worth, I know that's going to be a big topic there at the State of the Black World, but I just want to let people know in Baltimore to you know, however anyone feels about reparations, whether we're going to get it or not, or local level, it's a worthy, particularly with the cannabis, you know, I feel that there's an opportunity. That's, you know, when those things begin to get passed, there's an opportunity. I feel that we could create that and get it pushed and passed in the city of Baltimore. At least the study. Yeah, thank you. That's all.
I appreciate that. And getting back on solutions, like I say, man, you know, that's why I'm so, hyped up, because, like I said, I see all these little parts are springing up here, there, and everywhere. And I was talking to this powerful gentleman this morning by the name of Dr. Pender, and he's on here right now. And, you know, like I say, we are fighting on many fronts, financially, economically, financially, socially, spiritually, and a lot of other ways. And Dr. Penny, can you unmute yourself? I don't know if he's able to come on, but he said, you know, of course, I called him Dr. Pender, because he's an educated man. But he mentioned this to me this morning. He said, all that stuff I went to school for, I throw that stuff out the window now. He said, because we've been sold a bunch of lies. There you go. Dr. Pender.
Listen, hey, good evening, guys. How's everyone doing?
Yes, sir.
I'm thrilled to be in the crowd with the liberators. I put it this way, because that's what we're doing. We're liberating people from where they were to what they should be. I'd like to add to a lot of things that's been said tonight. First of all, I appreciate you guys because you all make my day. I'm a young guy. I'm just 38 twice, and I'm still learning. And I was telling Dave earlier that if we consider the fact that everything that we are trying to achieve is actually considered a trash can, because most of the stuff we wanted to achieve is like material stuff. And we look at what our real purpose is. Our purpose here on planet Earth is glorify God. That's first and foremost. We deal with depression, fear, loneliness, all these emotions. And these emotions are killing us as a people. We were 13% of the population, and we're dwindling. It's because we're going after what the system says. I got to have a car. I got to have this. I got to. And it's an everlasting thing. We're just going after things. But the real thing of it is, why don't we look at Yahshua as the principal person to give us the way? He did three things. He prayed hard, aimed high, stayed focused. He didn't have to worry about depression, fear, loneliness, all these things. That's perfection right there. Just go after what your goals are. So we show people how to use their gifts, how to use their natural gifts before they were born, and use those gifts to glorify God. A lot of the problems that you have, 90% of your problems will just waste away. It's because now you have purpose, because your purpose here on earth is not to just compete against one another, to be better than one another, but one of the things you have to do in your purpose is appreciate people, even your haters. Your haters are actually your students, because they hate you because of the gift that you have. You have a gift given to you from the creation of the world. Nobody else have that gift, but the person that hates you have a gift, but he just don't know how to develop it. So we've gotten together. We've gotten a few persons together, and we, in fact, the new book is called Creation Therapy, number two. It's, I think Amazon got it. We've got Creation Therapy one, but Creation two has everything. It has the will of the Father. That's the key, the will of the Father. Jesus focused on the will of the Father. I think if we as a people focus on the will of the Father, a lot of our problems would go away. In fact, 99.9% of them go away. You wouldn't worry about a person hating you, because then you understand why the person is doing so. It's just like you're an apple tree, and you see a lot of sticks in apple trees because somebody wants that apple. But a mulberry tree, you don't find any sticks in there. So therefore, you have something that someone wants. That's a part of the process. And that's in my book. It's called The Religion of Greed and Its Impact on African Americans, how they gave us the crab syndrome in American history. They made us hate one another. The color of your skin, what the color of my skin got to do with me making it to the kingdom of heaven? Jesus' grandmother was a black prostitute, so they fit the script. They went into the Bible. They began to put Caesar Borgia's pictures in there and stuff like that to fool you. But once you get to the realization of who you really are and work on your gift, everything else fades away. But I think you guys have done a neat job. Keep up the good work. Keep on praying and get into spirituality. Don't get into religion. Religion will kill you. And don't get into Christianity, because it's been tainted. Get into spirituality. Have a good relationship with God for about an hour a day. Man, you feel happy as a runaway slave. Want you guys to have a great evening. Be blessed.
Yes, sir. Now, I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit, because, see, you know, I hear what Dr. Pendis said, because as I told you earlier, I said, what my father been through, what I've been through, and all the pain and agony, because I was so confused. The world was sending me all of these crazy mm-hmm. messages, and I was taking it in. I was believing it. Mm-hmm. Felt bad about myself. I didn't think I measured up and all this kind of stuff. And just now, and you know, here I am in my 70s, and I just finally just come to realize that who I really am. Whose I am. I'm made in God's image, in his image. God is created. God owns, I mean, everything, every star, everything you see around you, that God is there, and I'm a part of all of that. I have access to all of that. Therefore, God is creator. If I'm in his image, I'm a creator as well. I told you one time that I had a thought one day. I walked around Baltimore City, drove around there, I said, I want to help my people. And I met black people. The first time in my life, I was proud of my people because I went into all these different businesses and I saw these black entrepreneurs doing this. I had to seek them, though. They wasn't out in the press. I had to actually look for them. When I seen these, when they talked to me, a thought came. I said, people, because I didn't get that. I told you we didn't have black history in out there. You know, only time I saw black people was Stephen Fletcher. He was out running a horse, or Amos and Andy. That was it for us black people. And then they had cartoons with us wearing bones in our heads of Africans and, you know, stuff like that. That's all the images I saw of black people until that day, into my 30s. When I walked around, went around Baltimore and met all of these black business people doing all these great and wonderful things, that's when the idea sparked. I said to myself, people need to know about them because I needed to know about them. For the first time, like I said before, I was proud of my people. And that's when I got the idea of starting a newspaper. Had no clue. None whatsoever. All I know, I was a printer. I know how to print stuff. That's it. But, you know, because I believed in what that, and I trusted God, did you know 6 months later, behold, just from that one thought, I held my own newspaper in my hand. I created it. And then a spark went off. And not only that, because these people told that when they talk, shared their stories with me, it was a lot of stories similar to mine. They had to struggle just as much as I had to. And so I've been on I've been on this mission for a long time. But then I tried to carry all this load myself, and that load wore me down. I ended up with heart surgery, strokes. I had some seizures. I had all kinds of cancers because stress will kill you. Trying to carry all this, even when you're trying to do good, it will kill you. But then just recently, I came to the wisdom and knowledge and knowing who I really am. And then now I say, I don't worry about nothing anymore these days. I don't care what happened to anybody. I don't care. I'll be concerned about it, but I don't stress about it. I don't worry too much about yesterday or tomorrow. I live for today. Today is all I got. And if I do what I do right today, if I can just put in, make a good day out of this day, tomorrow take care of itself. But I do know one thing, the power of one. See, that right now, see, my mind is clear. Like I said, it's nothing. I mean, you couldn't put a price on to have such a mind that is free. No pressure anymore. And guess what else? Whether y'all believe this or not, you need to try it. And if you don't know, call me up. And I'll send you some information that will free your mind up as well. Or if you call Dr. Penny, he will free your mind up as well. Let me just say this to you. Now, I know y'all heard about the universe. I know you had heard about the law of attraction. I know you heard about God. I know you heard, all of you have heard, because we've been indoctrinated with so many different versions of this and different, you know, of that. But this is based on my own experience. When I found out who I really am, and then I have access to everything out there in the universe, do you know in this last year, my whole world has been turned upside down? First of all, I'm at peace. And not only that, those things that I needed financially and everything else have now come my way. I don't worry about it. I don't worry about how I'm going to take it, how I'm going to pay for this, and how I'm going to take care of that. Don't think, I mean, based on David Murphy's own experiences, this is what's happening. And it's a powerful place to be. And if I could hit my brother Jake, he used to say this, boy, if I could hit you over the head with it, you know, I'll give it to you that way, but it's just something you have to learn for yourself. And if you don't know, ask somebody. If you don't know, I can send you some information that at least maybe can expand your courage. Another way I'm saying, expand your mind to let you know who you really are. And thank you, Dr. Pender, for that, because, you, man, like I said, this is a beautiful place to be in. And to get up in the morning to know that you have a purpose, to get up and know that you can make a difference. See, we are making a difference with the National Black Unity News. Like I said, we all over the world. People never seen the likes of us before in a publication. Black people, the way we are, full of us in there. And we are not beholden to no one. But in any case, let's move on. And we got another brother on here, Mr. Neil Spencer. Are you still with us? And Mr. Neil Spencer, if you're still with, unmute yourself, sir. Okay, you know, while you're doing it. And let me just, when I say people are coming together, or working together, I say about 6 months ago, Mr. Spencer gave me a call. He found me some kind of way online or through one of our publications. And he said he's trying to organize the black businesses in the state of Texas. And he said he's been trying for several years, you know, trying to get this thing together because it's on his heart to do that. And now because of our collaboration and Mr. Spencer now has a clear vision of where he wants to go, now he's actually organizing black businesses in the state. And guess what else? You see, I already said, I told Mr. Spencer, I said, Mr. Spencer, once you do that, I said, can you imagine? When you organize that blueprint that you had to organize those black businesses in the state, can you imagine the same thing can happen in Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Virginia, every place else? You know, and so like I say, man, keep your eyes open because we are doing this thing individually, collectively, local, national, and international. We are finally coming together because we now know we can't do this by ourselves. It does take the village. Well, with that being said, Dr. Nala Ali, how are you?
Good evening. I'm doing great. I hope everyone is.
Oh, I know I am. But look, I see Brother Haki is still on. We will all, you as well as the rest of us, will be at the that convention coming up. But you're also working with Dr. Pender as well. And so let people know who you are and what you're doing, especially when it comes to the physical part of our mentality. You know, you deal with so much. So let people know a little some of the things that you are doing.
Well, you know what? I'm glad to be on this call tonight, Mr. Murphy. But you know what? I'm on this call, and I'm just so full right now listening to everybody and what they're doing and what they're proposing to do. It's an awesome thing to be a part of the Black Unity newspaper, meeting all these wonderful people and seeing how God is bringing people together. And I just would like to say that as we continue to work in the community, no matter where you are, if you're in a small community, a large community, touch the people right where you are. We can be international, we can be global, and everybody doesn't have the opportunity to reach out like a lot of people do. But right there where you are, you can make a difference. And to me, that's what God is looking for us to reach out, reach one, teach one. Everybody grab somebody's hand. If you see someone who is in a circle and they're not doing well, it is our responsibility to go in and grab. And I'm talking about the melanated people. It's time for us to stop sitting back waiting for other individuals to come and give us a helping hand. I remember back in the day in our community in the apartment complex when I was in my 20s, when one person didn't have a car, the other person had a car. When one person didn't have food, somebody else brought them food. And that's where we need to get back to. We need to become community activists and know what is going on right there where we are. Yes, Dr. Nala Ali, I'm a speaker, I'm a teacher, I'm an author, but you know what? I am moved with compassion for hurting people. And I tell all of my friends, people in my circle, when you hurt, I hurt. If you don't feel good, I don't feel good. I am like you. I want to be solution oriented. What can I do to help? What can I do to reach out and teach people? And that's why I am so adamant about the wellness community. I'm so adamant about the spirit, the soul, and the body, because they all three act as one. If you're in balance in your spirit, you can be in balance in the rest of your body, because you know, everybody calls God ABCD, but you talked to me last week about religion. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about having a relationship with the one who created you. When you look in the mirror, you don't see the real you. The real you is behind your eyes, because you were spirit first. You were a spirit first, and God clothed you with this skin. So you don't see the real me, but the real me is spiritually activated. And I just tell people, if you have the spirit of the Most High inside of you, you have to have compassion to reach out. There's no way the greater one lives inside of you and you don't feel something. Oh, my goodness, you don't feel something. something about trying to help someone who else was in pain. And when you find out that someone else's pain is worse than yours, that's why I was a part of the youth growing up, teaching the youth, bringing kids to my house, taking care of them, going to the group home, speaking to people, speaking to women. You see, we have a mouth. This mouth is a mouthpiece that's used for the greater one. You know, we don't see Christ in the natural, but we are the small gods living down here on earth to touch people's lives, and lives aren't going to change until you go out there and touch somebody. You know, God gives us gifts and he gives us talents, and we're supposed to use those things to activate the community, to sparkle the community with the light. The light isn't to be hid behind a bushel. A light shines bright, and we all on this call are bright lights. Everybody in your newspaper, they're bright lights that God has given to you, Mr. Murphy, to shine to the world. And I mean, if you're in London, if you're in Africa, if wherever you are, Jamaica, it doesn't matter. We should be going giving. We should be known for being light bearers, carrying the torch, you know, putting the light in the candle, you know, making sure that you're touching someone. And I even the Pan-African, oh, you're doing so much. I'm so proud of all that you guys are doing. And the only thing I want to say is keep on reaching out. Keep on allowing the Most High to enlighten you with the gifts that you have. And as we continue to work together, I believe that we can save our people from the detriment that they're in, because we have more tools today. More tools today than we have ever had in our entire lives. And I want to say something else to you, too. Don't be so moved about what the news, another subject on another day. I want you to listen to the good news, because there is a lot of good news out there. Yes, there's some painful things going on, but there is some good news out there. Find the good news media and listen to the good news, because we can get very depressed, very oppressed, very suppressed by listening to the negativity that they talk about our people, how they place us in front of everybody. We know that the opioid movement, for instance, that's been going on, that's because a bunch of them are dying. And so when in our neighborhood, when there was problems with the drugs, they call it a drug war. But with them, with their people passing, they call it opioid. It's an opioid pandemic. But yet they've given them, did you see today that they're giving them products to help them get rid of the opioid pandemic, where they can actually be able to and get a drug that they even saying that it may be free. But what do they do to us? But it's our responsibility to grab us. They're not going to grab us. They know we kings and queens. They know that we rule and reign, and that's why they oppress us and try to suppress us. But it is our responsibility as the black melanated people to depend on ourselves and the Christ and the God that lives on the inside of us. Thank you, guys.
Pumped up here. All right. Okay. All right. And speaking of that, you know, Ms. Kathleen Murphy, can you unmute yourself, please? Kathleen Murphy. Okay. All right. Hoping she'll come back on. And we have several other people. You know, the way we work here is we try to get as many people in. Vernon, you want to share something?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I always enjoy coming on, listening to what's going on in our community and with everybody in our group. Earlier, I was on a call with Dr. Lee J, and I met a young gentleman, HSB Film Studios, and he's a phenomenal guy. And hopefully, he will come on and introduce himself, I guess. Gerald, Mr. Gerald. He's got a lot of stuff going on. And I was telling about the group, and I showed him the newspaper. And I think, you know, he's a good fit for us, you know, and I asked him to come on, you know, try to get a little feel about what's going on with the newspaper. And I don't know, would you like to say anything?
Yeah, HSB Film Studio, can you unmute yourself, sir? Okay.
Okay, maybe he'll come on later.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And, okay, and Mr. Walter Murphy, can you unmute yourself, sir?
Done, David. It's done. I'm unmuted.
All right. I know you have something to say. What you got to say about what's going on with us as a people?
Well, David, I've been listening to this conversation, especially about the education and the plight of the Black American, and it sours my heart to know that the report that Brother Cliff gave from way back in the early 70s is true today. It's a heartbreaker. And what makes it even worse is that it is worse. Not that it's even. I think about the educational system in America, and I know for a fact that there have been some deeply rooted ideas and concepts about educating Black people. This past weekend, one of the sisters from the National Black Unity News, Ms. Kim Poole, came through Virginia, and we stopped, and her point was to go to Farmville, Virginia, and it was right near Lunenburg and a few other places where they absolutely shut down the entire school system versus integration. And when I say that, they shut the whole system down right here in Virginia, about maybe 80 miles away from where I'm at right now. And a lot of the people that were in those school systems, unfortunately, have been affected to this very day. I mean, you miss, even another heartburn is that, counties don't normally support each other, financially. But during that period, the Black kids that were going to a Black school got shut down, and the white kids all of a sudden got money for private school. And so I share all these things to say that, I hear it, and the only way that we can probably get back, or even close to even, is the idea and the concept of some of the things that's already happened. We talk about quotas and this and that and the other, and there are a lot of people that are against that, and I get it. But the idea and the concept of us being not necessarily been pushed back from so many years of not being educated, but the idea and the concept of it being the fight to educate, and even today, if you want to get educated in America, you go to an institution or matriculate to an institution of higher learning. No problem. I've been there and I've done a lot of that. And then you matriculate through, if you want to be really effective in America, they want you to get your master's degree. Oh, but that's not good in some cases, because if not, if you want to be tenured in certain areas in America, you have to have a doctorate. Now, it's good that you're working in those fields, but if you're not in those fields, that doctorate, like a lot of BAs and AAs, what good are they to you other than, making a check mark that you've been a college educated individual? And that job, that education, like Dr. Finney was talking about earlier, a lot of that stuff that we teach you ain't doing any squat to that, okay? But the point is that I'm really heartbroken and really sad about the state of America when it comes down to information. And I am really glad of being a part of the National Black Unity News, because it is one of the things that we do. We provide information to people, solution-oriented information to people. And I hope the world hears this, because our goal is not to take the money. We ain't been begging for no money. That's not our goal. And those who do have money, don't even think about trying to come in and buy yourself, because it ain't going to happen. The idea and the concept of what we're trying to do is to strictly be a service to this kind of stuff. The only way we're going to get out of it, y'all, again, is for us to be aware of what's going on and then to have the solution to try to fix it, and even better, to head it off. Because a lot of us, ladies and gentlemen, already see where we're going. We know exactly where some of these laws, some of these rules, some of these regulations are specifically taking us, and every one of them are restrictive. And so, ladies and gentlemen, look at your ability to do what you can, and like the lady was saying earlier, do it locally. And let's face it, all the laws and the rules, all that stuff applies mostly if it ain't local. So get into who you are and then affect where you are so that we can have a better life for everybody. Back to you, David.
All right. I appreciate that, sir. All right. Before we shut it down.
David Murphy?
Oh, there you go.
And I apologize. I've been listening to everything. A call came in that I could not ignore, and I apologize. But I'm here now.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you, because Dr. Ali was talking about reaching out to each other. Yeah. I don't care what circle you walk in, you need to reach out to someone. And I know you do that, especially with our young folks. So I wanted you to share with people what you do with our young folks.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Dr. Ali. I did listen to her conversation. I will just say this. What I do, I look back at it, and perhaps I could have done more. We get complacent sometimes, and I know I could do more. But I can truly say I have touched people one-on-one, family members, friends, community members. I had three calls, meetings today that I chaired, and it was all about coordinating. And
you are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing *6.
I'm trying to individually do things. Right now, in my house, since this last meeting I was on, I had a meeting that started at 6 and ended about 7:20, right before your call started. I have pulled out three different projects that I'm working in. We'll hopefully touch one of them tonight that involves the youth in our community. Different projects, different organizations. I'm nonstop. I've heard someone say that they find that in a lot of cases, when a black person retires, they work in the community. When a white person retires, they go on vacations. Well, it's like I work all day on my projects and to go out and touch the community and do things. So I'm doing so many different small things. I'm touching people's lives. I know I am. But it's nothing that I want to really boast about, but I know I'm making some differences. And I haven't even begun. There's so much more to do. And we just don't want to get complacent. That's easy to do, to get complacent. And I'm trying not to let that set in. That's all.
All right. I appreciate that. And as we come to the close, you know, I just want to thank everybody for the input, because this is a powerful conversation. This wasn't the conversation I was planned on doing, but, you know, I'm glad it went this way. And that's sometimes we need to let go, you know, best laid plans of man. But, you know, I'm quite sure that with the wealth, the information, the knowledge, the wisdom that God has given each and every one of us, and you know, to do what we need to do individually. But collectively, it's a powerful, powerful source. And I am so well pleased, not with the condition we in today, but I see today there are movements taking place. Like I said, locally, nationally, and internationally, things are beginning to happen. And we cannot give up. We can't faint. We can't get in, because the battle just beginning to, you know, it's raging. We stand on great shoulders. It's our turn to fight this battle, because we ain't all going to be here tomorrow. But while we're here this day, we must do what we can, not only for ourselves to have a better quality of life, but for our family members, our communities, and our nation as well. And I want to thank each and every one of you, because God has truly blessed each and every one of you with a multitude of gifts and talents, and you're using them. See, y'all not the ones who just didn't know why this is going on, this should take place and everything. Y'all the ones who are actually making things happen. And I am so well pleased to be in the midst of you, because like I said before, that synergy that we bring to the table has and will continue to make a difference in people's lives. And so I'm going to bid you all good night. And I just want to remind you that we'll be on tomorrow night, 7:30, when Miss Kathleen Murphy will be the host. Be on that, because you, like I tell you, you need to show up, because you never know who you're going to meet, what's going to take place. And because we have shown up, a lot of collaborations have taken place and will continue to do so. And so I'm going to bid you all a pleasant good night and hope to see you tomorrow night. And keep fighting until the victory is won. You know, and I have much respect and love for each and every one of you. Just continue to do what you do. And at the end of the day, when you lay your head down, you know, I love that word in the Bible when Jesus said this, well done, for service. And I mean, that's like music to my ears, you know, because when you make your life account for something, not just for yourself, but for your fellow man, like Dr. Pender said, it makes all the difference in the world. And that, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you all good night and hope to see you tomorrow night. And Brother Cliff and all of y'all who have any events coming up, you know, we need to support each other. Those who have businesses and services, we need to support one another. And we need to pick up the phone and talk to one another because we never know what each and every one of us are going through sometimes. And so with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bid you all good night. Take care.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, Darren.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night. Strong. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Goodbye.
That concludes our broadcast for the day. Okay, that concludes our broadcast for tonight. Catch you next same week, catch you next week, same time, same station. And if you have any comments you'd like to share, text those comments to me to 252-458-3712. Or if you'd like to be a guest speaker on the National Black Unity News podcast show, reach out to me, Baba Sitawa Jahi, again, at 252-458-3712. All right, good night. Take care.